Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Let's talk.
Hercules, the inside story of the RAF legend. It's one of the, perhaps, it's the, it was the workhorse of the RAF, a plane that has been there, done that, carried practically everything. It's now a Sunday Times top 10 bestseller, seen through the eyes of former RAF captain Scott Bateman, MBM. Do I have to say that Scott joins me live on the line now? Scott, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Hercules, and I just thought that was the name full off, but it's actually called, what's it like? Well, the proper name is it the C-130?
The C-130 Hercules, yeah. 70 years this year.
No.
I mean, it's been around for 70 years. It's not just, when you think of 70-year-old aeroplane, people think of Lancasters and Spitfires, but actually this is the C-130 is a 70-year-old aeroplane. It's remarkable, isn't it? And still being used by air forces across the world today as their prime airlifter.
I mean, if you think about sort of the commercial airlines, that the planes were around 70 years ago, some of them were unwieldy, some were downright deadly, weren't they? I'm thinking like the Comet and the you know, de Havilland and all that sort of stuff, and they are no longer with us for very good reasons. What is it that makes the Hercules then so, you know, such a workhouse? Is it its ease of maintenance? Is it good to fly? Is it just so dependable? What is it?
I think it's all those things. I think, honestly, I do. If we started off, I mean, it was simple. Yeah. It was, you know, you will have heard of the phrase fly by wire. This is actually wires. Everything is connected by wires. It's simple to maintain. It's simple to fly. It really does what you want. And it's the size of a removals van. You know, it's enormous. The back of this thing, you can literally put tanks in it. You can put two tanks in the back of this thing. It is enormous in the back.
But I mean, that then begs the fly, because I mean, a lot of friends have got sort of a light aircraft pilots, and all they've got, because I'll tell you, I'm based in Marbella, so they've got jets or something like that. And so what's it like to fly? What's the feat? I mean, is it a lumbering beast, or is it remarkably responsive?
I think your friends who fly these light airplanes could jump in this and fly this. No. It is a joy to fly. It is so simple. You point it where you want it to go, like you would a little light airplane, and it does just that. But this thing is, you know, almost 70 tons. You know, it's not a little toy like your friend's light single engine pistons, but it does fly like that. It's hugely responsive. It handles really well, particularly at low speeds for landing on, you know, austere environments. Like, you could land it in your back garden almost, which is a bit, that'd be a bit of fun. But they would be familiar with that. It's such a joy to fly.
So what's your relationship with it? Because I mean, presumably, as small boys, we all want to be fighter jet pilots, don't we? So that's the obvious attraction. But what was your route or your relationship with the Hercules? And also, can you explain this is a term that people sort of, other people go completely sort of Alan Partridge, go, oh yeah, Loadmaster, and not know what on earth you're talking about. So I'm not going to go full Partridge, but just explain to me what your past and your relationship with the Hercules was.
Well, I was very fortunate. I have been officially worked in three seats on the aeroplane. So you said the Loadmaster, so that's where I started my career as a sergeant in the Air Force. And the Loadmaster effectively is responsible for everything that isn't flying. He loads, they unload, they're responsible for the passengers, anything that you throw out of the aeroplane, whether that be boxes or humans. You know, they're responsible for all of that, the weight and balance of the aeroplane. And most crucially and importantly, keeping the sausage rolls warm in the oven. So, yeah, so the Loadmaster is responsible for the food as well, both for the passengers and the crew. Then I was very fortunate to be selected to be a pilot. I commissioned in the Royal Air Force, became an officer. I then came back to the Hercules to fly in the right-hand seat as a co-pilot, then latterly as a captain for a couple of tours. So I've had a long story with the C-130 Hercules and 47 Squadron, which was the squadron I served on.
So just getting back to the sausage rolls, because that's the important bit. I mean, I'd never thought about the in-flight catering as it was, because, I mean, it's got to be flexible, so it's got to be basic, and we all know those pictures of the inside with, you know, is it the loading nets and that sort of keep the cargo nets to keep things from falling over. But, you know, what's it like to, I mean, Is it noisy when you're in that sort of in the cargo hold? I mean, give me a is it pressurized? I mean, I just because I'm an absolute I know nothing about this, Scott. Yeah.
So it's a completely pressurized airplane. You know, I've been up to 30 odd thousand feet in it. So, you know, it's just like an airliner on the inside, with one big exception. When they were building the Hercules, the test pilot described it as it was the only propeller airplane he'd ever flown that was stealthy on the outside because they'd put all the noise on the inside of the airplane. And all of the noise from the outside does feel like it's in the inside. It is deafening in the inside when you're flying around. So you and I could not have a conversation like this in the inside. We'd be shouting at the top of our voices. We'd have hearing protection on and we'd barely be able to hear each other. So it is quite fatiguing because of the noise inside the aeroplane when you fly it. But you very quickly get used to that.
And as a load master, presumably, I mean, you've got to work these things out, because if you're putting two tanks in, plus a few sort of squishy bits, i.e. human beings as well, you've got to work out how much this is going to actually get away and what it really weighs, opposed to what they say it's going to weigh, because the tank might weigh that, but they might put something in it to take with them to keep them quiet during those long sort of hours. So, I mean, how much sort of math stroke physics do you have to do? And have there been occasions where you've gone, well, no, you can't take that because it's going to, you know, because presumably you need to be generating an awful lot of power to get off the ground with a couple of tanks inside.
You do, and I've got a great story in the book about this where it went horribly wrong for us. So we were carrying, we were in Kabul in Afghanistan, and we were asked to carry a JCB, an armoured JCB, out to the middle of somewhere in Afghanistan where they were going to be building a longer runway to allow bigger aeroplanes to come in, but they could get a Hercules in there and we were going to take this out. The Loadmaster got his calculator out and he worked out based on the altitude, the temperature, all the environmental conditions, what we could carry. And he said, no problem, we can just carry this. He said, I've got my fine pencil out, we can carry this. It's down to about 10 kilos of a difference. So we thought, oh my goodness, 10 kilos, that's hot. But he said, no, we're going to be good. And obviously there are margins in these things anyway. So we thought, 10 kilos, that'll be fine. So he loads it all on, we take off. We didn't really take off.
Right.
We kind of just flew along for a bit and didn't really go up, and then flew along for a little bit more and didn't really go up, and then even more, and we flew along for about a quarter of a mile before we started to climb. Luckily there was no trees, no nothing off the end of the airfield.
Right.
We went to this strip, we landed and got off, and we couldn't figure out what had gone wrong. He was scratching his head, absolutely aghast that, you know, this is obviously something had gone wrong. And basically this JCB is so heavy that it can't be carried with its buckets on. And it was fitted. It had its bucket on the front and its bucket on the back, which added 2 tons to the weight of the JCB. So we were 2 tons overweight and we still managed to get airborne. So, you know, one of those I learned from flying about, you know, stories from that. But it was amazing.
One of those famous RAF bucket moments, and not exactly the words that you would have said at that precise moment in time.
There were a few other choice ones.
Yes, indeed. Is it one of the things as well, it's versatility, because it's not, you know, by its very nature, I mean, it's a workhorse, but you can take it low over the ocean. You can fly at a low speed as well. So comparatively low airspeed, I mean, you're not thundering around at, you know, whatever, Mac, whatever. So it means that if you are doing search and rescue, if something needs to be dropped to, I'm thinking, obviously, in an aid situation when you've got environmental or humanitarian crisis that's on the way, and also, obviously, if you're doing resupply and you can't really land, if you've got, if you've got a hot landing zone, I believe it's called, then therefore it makes it perfect for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about it is its versatility. It can literally do anything, and all of the equipment it needs to do all of the roles you've just described is actually inside of it all of the time. So it's packed away on the sides, it's packed away on the floor. So we could go from being a Pickford's van, you know, a removals van, just having freight attached to the floor, to being an ambulance where we can carry 9 to 8, you know, stretcher cases, to being carrying palletized loads, to airdropping parachutists. All of that can be changed in, I mean, a maximum of about 90 minutes. You know, you could change from one role to the other. And the loadmaster is trained to do all of that. They can change it with a bit of help from their friends in about 90 minutes. So it's all there all of the time.
So when you see that inside, you know, you go on the YouTube and you see, you know, guys leaping out of the back of Hercules and whatever, but you see all the little, you know, the metallic bits and pieces. And again, this shows how much I know about interior aircraft, but you think, you know, they're not just doing that for a sort of like post-aliens look, are they? That's actually functional. It means you can do different configurations, you can lash things to it, you know, almost like the ultimate, as you said, the ultimate removal lorry.
Yeah, if you think about Meccano, if you remember Meccano
from the old days. So. Absolutely. Now we're talking.
It's a bit like Meccano and Lego put together, and you've got all of these pieces inside of the aeroplane, and they say, we're going to do some parachuting today, so you've got to find the parachuting bits of Meccano and Lego and attach it all to the aeroplane and make it fit for parachutists. It's really that simple. And you just get your toolbox out and off you go.
Can I just say that's probably an oxymoron, fit for parachutists, because presumably the job with that lot, so that gets to stay in the aircraft and not leap out too early, because of knowing how they are.
Yeah, we've got a great story in the book, actually, about one of the most audacious parachute raids that I think that we've ever seen in the UK, which was this individual was an explosives and ordnance disposal guy, bomb disposal guy, and his first ever parachute jump was out of a Hercules into the Atlantic to counter a bomb threat on the QE2. So he was parachuted out mid-Atlantic to the QE2 to counter a bomb threat, an actual bomb threat. And that was his first ever parachute jump. And his training took place on the aeroplane on the way to the QE2.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was. We've met this guy, and he is quite an individual, very brave.
Yeah. But an awful lot of this the book sort of kicks off in Iraq, doesn't it? And again,
it does. Yeah,
you were there. One of the things, sleep, eat, repeat. And one of the things that struck me was the fact that you in your off time, you're playing Counter Strike or whatever it is, well, on the Xbox.
Halo on the Xbox. Yeah,
isn't that the ultimate busman's holiday? Because you're in, you know, you can kind of do that if you want to by just sort of wandering, you know, sort of wandering 2 miles down the road and seeing what's going on. No.
You'd be surprised how cathartic it is. Yeah, but it really is. And you know, it takes you away from the reality of where you are. You know, we were living in tents and it was hot and horrible. And actually to get in the aeroplane was a bit of a relief because it's air conditioned, at least.
Yeah. The one of the things that's going to strike me with this one is maintenance in those sort of environments. We all know that dust will muck up, you know, completely mucks up most flying things, helicopters especially. That's always been one of the things. I mean, is it the ease of maintenance, one of the main strengths of the Hercules, and it can because it's old school technology, then it can take on the more adverse weather conditions in a way that's something that is perhaps more, I'm not going to say finely tuned, but you know what I'm getting at here, Scott.
No, I do. And, you know, you're talking about the technology and, you know, the Hercules from where it started to where it is now is a very different airplane on the inside.
Right.
You know, there are computers, it's glass cockpit now, whereas it started out as an analog cockpit. So there is complexity in the inside of it. But the great strength of the C-130 is if you look at your airliner that you travel on to go to Malaga, the engines will be on the bottom of the wing and they'll be very close to the runway. So if you were landing on an austere runway, let's say something that was a bit more dusty, those engines are going to suck up all that dust that's going to go around inside your engine. And just like your car engine, jet engines do not like that. That's not good for your jet engine. And although the Hercules has propellers, those propellers are driven by jet engines. But those jet engines are probably about 10 to 15 foot off of the ground because it's a high wing airplane
Yeah.
and it keeps the jet engines and the propellers away from all that dust and horrible stuff and actually makes it really, really quite safe to land in those more austere environments because you're not going to suck in that stuff into your jet. So that's what it was designed for. It was designed to land on not paved runways. It was designed to land in literally your back garden. So that's how it works.
And when you climb up into a Hercules for the first time, I mean, presumably you know you're very high up. I mean, it gives you, but you it gives you a great sort of view of what's going on, which is quite important when you're flying something that big. But again, it is, you know, she is a big and beautiful beast. So therefore, it might, you know, your first flights with, you know, out to the simulator and, you know, in a real zone must have been quite, you know, must be quite, I mean, I know you're highly trained, but it still must be quite something to get out, you know, climb up there and fire up and take off.
It is, and it's exhilarating for the first time because you go from the small aeroplanes that your friends have to flying this 70-ton thing that makes a lot of noise and might have a couple of hundred people behind you, you know. So as you're taxiing out, you gingerly taxi this thing out, and then when it takes off and, you know, you actually get to feel it flying, oh, that first time is just amazing, absolutely amazing.
And it's more than, I mean, I know we can get all sort of not sloppy about it, but it's more than just an aircraft, isn't it? Because for a lot of people, if you are whether you are have been wounded in a military encounter, where there is a humanitarian disaster, there's a natural disaster, the sight of a Hercules coming into view, either low or high, or landing somewhere that you think they couldn't do, you know, there's a relief to them, and that's a huge responsibility, Scott, for yourself and your crew, because you for a lot of people this is. And I know it's a cliche, but it says it's cliche because it's true. It's a life or death situation for a lot of people.
It is. And I think that people will think we're mad when I say, you know, it's just not a piece of metal. People think it's a piece of aluminium and that's it. How can you have a relationship with a piece of aluminium? And well, people love their cars. You know, people have cars, they give them names. We've called our aeroplane Fat Albert. You know, it is, you know, it has that colloquial name. And actually, you do become tied to it. Your crew becomes tied to it. You know, you've been in these austere and life and death situations in your aeroplane, you know, where people are shooting at you, or you know, you're doing humanitarian aid, you're taking high risks to save people's lives. When you're in those situations, of course you'll have a bond. And actually, the bond's not only between the humans, it's between the humans and the aeroplane as well, because the aeroplane's what's got them there and the aeroplane's what's going to get everyone home safely at the end of the day.
Getting everyone home safely. Yes, that's important. This book is dedicated to Star Trek III and Hilton 22. And those are obviously two planes or two crews and aircraft that didn't make it. How difficult is it for you to sort of to write about that? And how much of this book did you need to be a testament to their bravery?
The one thing I'll say is, you know, the entire book, I've literally standing on the shoulders of giants here. You know, some of the stories in these books, so the stories in the book, sorry, are just amazing and things that honestly I could have never have done. You know, these people are truly brave, and anyone who gives their life in the sacrifice of service is amazing. It is difficult because I knew all of the crews that you've just talked about. And to write about that in a personal way is very difficult. And we talk about the families as well. So it's not just how that impacts the squadron and the people on the squadron. But one of the widows and their daughter talked about how that impacts families when someone doesn't come home. And actually, that's the lasting legacy of this, is that, you know, those individuals, we can move on and we can go and do fly and do other missions. They can't. That mission will stay with them forever. And it is heartbreaking to have to talk about that. And those risks are there every single day, as they were when I was in the service. And people who are doing that literally today are taking those same kind of risks. And I'd like to thank them for their service and continuing to keep us safe.
You now fly with a commercial airline as well. Are you sort of not phased then, because now you've flown the Hercules? You kind of think that you've been there, done that, and I'm not saying you're complacent, but do you sometimes sort of wistfully wish for all? I mean, because it's all very quiet, I suppose, and very civilized, and you know it's more than sausage rolls for the in-flight. Do you now sometimes sort of wistfully look back and think, you know, I quite like to do just another half day, you know, in a Hercules?
I'd die to have another sausage roll on board. So I do miss those. I think there comes a time in your life when taking those kind of risks and doing that day in, day out, it is kind of gone past you. I think that there comes a time in your life when you think, I'm done with that now. And as much as I'd love to go back and be with the people, and I do on occasion go back and be with the people, I think taking those risks in an aeroplane and flying a military aeroplane in a military environment, there comes a point where you go, enough. And I reached that point, and now I'm quite happy to sit there with my cup of tea in a very quiet flight deck and dream of sausage rolls rather than actually be doing it.
What was the spark then? What galvanised you into writing this book? Did you just have all this material and you thought it was a story that needed to be told?
Well, it is definitely a story that needs to be told, and there are lots of stories in here, both from the RAF and beyond. I think the fact it was coming to an end. So the chapter of Hercules and its story with the Air Force was coming to an end. The Hercules was being sunsetted, replaced in part by the Airbus A400M. And I think I was kind of worried, as were some others, that these stories would be lost in time. So as the aeroplane was being sunsetted, we decided to get together as a little gang, bring up some amazing stories from the Air Force and some friends as well. You know, there's the most audacious raid ever carried out by a Hercules, the raid on Entebbe. So audacious, they made a couple of movies about it, is in the book there as well. And we had a fantastic opportunity to talk to Brigadier General Joshua Shani, who actually flew that raid and rescued those hostages from Entebbe. So that was kind of all these stories, didn't want them to be lost. And the Hercules being sunsetted was the real impetus for that.
The book is called Hercules, the inside story of an RAF legend. It's by Scott Bateman, MBE. It's a Sunday Times top 10 bestseller. If people want to follow you online, I'm not saying you do the TikTok, Scott, but do you have a website, or is there where they can follow you and what you're up to?
Yeah, of course. It's scottybateman.com, S-C-O-T-T-I-E, bateman.com. I'm at Scotty Bateman on X and at Scotty Bateman _ on Instagram, if anybody fancies a follow. TikTok's a bit beyond.
Yes, yes.
There comes a time in life when TikTok, like military flying, needs to be confined to the bin.
Absolutely. And you can order, you'll be able to, I'll use that expression. And also you can order it by clicking on the front cover, which is now up on our own virtual bookstore. The book is called Hercules, the inside story of an RAF legend. It's by Scott Bateman. Scott, thank you so much for your time today.
No, thanks for having me on. It's been really good fun.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.